Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you two, Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a Creepy Way.
Welcome. This is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about Mission Impossible 2, directed by John Woo, who we know from Jason's favorite movie, Face Off.
Well, that explains a great deal.
So, welcome back, Jason. Actually, Thank you. Welcome back both of you after the holiday weekend.
Thank you.
But it's been probably almost a month since listeners have heard from Brother Jay.
I'm aloof like that.
That's right.
I need my space and my beauty rest.
Ah, like the lady says, I want to be alone.
Which lady?
I'm not sure. One of those, like, Greta Garbo ladies, I think.
I think it was Greta Garbo.
Yeah, it could be. I think that's a quote from a Batman Power Records album I had as a kid.
Wow. Nice callback.
Pretty sure. So, anyway.
Were those the ones that were colored vinyl?
I'm not sure. Yeah, maybe. I know the Chipmunks one was colored vinyl, but I don't know if the Power Records ones were, but... Oh.
The Chipmunks had a translucent red one.
Yeah. Drew, did I ever share with you Spider-Man versus Man-Wolf?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, what do you mean share with me?
Recently.
No, not recently. I remember it from being a little kid.
It's an interesting, because it's kind of violent. I mean, for today's standards. I remember it
being really dark.
Yeah, yeah, it was, because it's a dark story.
Have you rewatched any of the cartoons of our childhood? They are pretty violent, too.
Yeah, yeah, this just doesn't have... This was almost like a serious thing, except it wasn't... Well, anyway, I'll share it with you, and we'll talk about it at some point.
I remember, like J. Jonah Jameson Jr., like, screaming in pain as he was turning into the Man-Wolf.
Oh, yeah, no, he had a bad time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what astronaut stuff will get you. So, anyway, so Mission Impossible 2, Brother Jay, this is on your list, right?
Yeah,
you're the Mission Impossible fan of the group.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, so you had not seen this before tonight?
I have never seen this movie before in my lifetime.
Okay, Drew, you had seen this before?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I saw it in the theater. Maybe with
a lot of people did. I mean, even though it's widely regarded as the worst Mission Impossible movie, it was still a hit.
Oh yeah, they made a shit ton of money. And looking at some reviews, there is a lot of nostalgia about this movie. All of them start with, "Oh, this is a bad movie,"
mm-hmm.
But it's still kind of enjoyable in places. Now, I think Brother Jay is going to contradict that.
I think Tom Cruise's wig should have had its own acting credit.
Well, we can blame Mr. Cruise for all of this.
I don't doubt it.
He was one of the main producers of this movie. And because he got a bunch of deals on like merchandise and royalties and back-end stuff, he made about $75 million for this movie.
Wow.
Yeah. He actually funded the overruns on his own. Like, he took out his American Express card. Because as one of the producers, that's what you do. And there were some overruns. And the movie was delayed because he was shooting Eyes Wide Shut for a year. So it pushed back the schedule and everything.
Oh, so he had a lot of shit he was working out with this movie.
Oh, I'm sure, yes. And it shows, I think. But let's dive in. So, Brother Jay, you said you had never seen it before. What's your initial reaction to it?
This was the biggest mass of hot garbage I've seen in a long time.
Do you think we're spoiled because we have recently seen the brand new James Bond trailer?
No.
Okay.
I just think this is a bad movie.
The James Bond trailer does not look good.
You don't think so?
No.
Oh, I think that looks... Of course, no. I think this probably had a good trailer, too. If you because this movie, Mission Impossible 2, this is real. The complaints they got about...
It's not real.
Well, the complaints they got about the first movie was that there wasn't enough action scenes. So their stated goal was, don't worry about the plot too much. Just deal with, we're going to focus on action. So John Woo had some action scenes he wanted to shoot, and they wrote the movie around those action scenes.
Don't worry about the plot. Mission accomplished.
Yeah, they ticked that box off early.
Well, the plot is exactly, it's this is like almost a remake of Alfred Hitchcock's Notorious, which is a great movie that we will talk about eventually, but it's the same basic plot as this movie.
I think the fact that Anthony Hopkins was uncredited speaks volumes.
Yeah, well,
Anthony Hopkins was playing his part like a Bond villain.
Oh, definitely.
I don't know what he was doing.
Yeah, he was in another movie. I think he and Tom Cruise's wig could have been in a movie all by themselves. I imagine the wig would talk like Senor Wences.
he had to work out to get that neck, those neck muscles right, so he could flip the hair around like he did. Because there was a lot of hair flipping going on.
It was ridiculous. I seriously, I was screaming inside my head, this movie has to end, this movie has to end, this movie has to end. And Jesse was like, you have an hour left.
Yeah, that was the other part of this movie. God. It was overlong.
And it suffered from it just collapsed on itself. It was just, I don't know.
Was another one of the complaints about the first movie that they didn't have enough ridiculous mask work?
Well, you know how much I love the masks in the first movie. So this movie was crazy over the top with the masks.
But that's a TV show thing, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So but, I think they have to do it for fan service.
There wasn't a single moment in this movie that I wasn't able to predict. Every time there was going to be a mask, I knew there was going to be a mask, including at the chemical factory, at the bio factory. Like, I knew it was, anyway, it was like everything was so telegraphed.
Oh, yeah. I bet you didn't predict a pigeon smokescreen.
Well, that's a fan service for John Woo.
Yes.
Yeah, this was full of trademarks. Like, I didn't realize it, but apparently there's a running gag. In the first movie, they talked about how they needed a cappuccino machine. And so they had a cappuccino machine. I guess he was offered cappuccino by Anthony Hopkins in this movie.
He was.
Yeah. And then, of course, he goes down on a wire, of course. But, yeah. So, Drew, do you remember when you first saw it? What did you think?
I thought this movie made no sense. Tom Cruise's hair is out of control. But I thought some of the action scenes, while extremely silly, were still fun. And I thought... I will watch anything that Tandy Newton stars in ever.
Yeah, she's fine. I mean, I like her. I don't know if I had the same reaction that you did necessarily, but she was perfectly respectable. I think I remember liking this in the theater. This is a popcorn movie. This is not aspiring to be anything else.
I did think this was the last one we were ever going to get.
Yeah, me too. Faux show.
Yeah.
Because it's not, there's nothing original about it. No. Now, when we talk about the next couple of movies in the series, we'll see if it actually gets any more original. Because I remember the next couple are more interesting, I think. More fun.
And this was the movie that made Hugh Jackman a star, right?
Yes, because Doug Ray Smith had to turn down Wolverine to play this movie. Doug Ray Scott, sorry. Well, he was going by an assumed name after this movie because he was, you know, disappointed in his performance.
I like to pronounce his name Doug Ray Scott.
He probably does too.
He was in a movie that I just happened to see on one of the cable movie channels one time, where he played Ripley.
I did not know that.
As in The Talented Mr. Ripley, but older.
Yeah, I know there's the one, well, there's, of course, Matt Damon. But there's also the one where John Malkovich plays Ripley. And there was a third one. I remember we talking about it, but I've never seen it. Was it good?
Maybe he was the bad guy in Malkovich's Ripley movie.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe, now that I'm thinking about it.
Because Ripley, yes, he was an older Ripley, obviously.
Yeah, I just remember him being in a Ripley movie.
Yeah, well, maybe. I think there's been more than two Ripley movies, but Brother Jay's going to figure this out. He's our resident IMDb-er. And the answer to the Ripley question is...
2002 Ripley's Game. John Malkovich plays Tom Ripley. And Doug Ray Scott plays Jonathan Trevani.
Ah, okay. So, I have seen that movie then.
He must be the mobster bad guy.
Also starring Lena Headey,
yeah,
and Ray Winstone.
Excellent. Well, we should put that on the calendar.
And there's Ripley Underground.
Yeah, see, that's the one I haven't seen. And maybe it's not even available, right?
2005. Roger Spottiswood.
Oh, and is that Richard Grieco who plays Thomas Ripley? Thank you.
Barry Pepper.
Who is Barry Pepper?
I remember Barry Pepper most from being Ed Norton's friend in The 25th Hour.
Oh, William Dafoe's in it.
But also Roger Maris in the movie 61 Asterix.
Ah.
The plot keywords for this movie.
For Mission Impossible 2?
No, for Ripley Underground.
Okay.
I don't want to talk about Mission Impossible 2. the plot keywords for Ripley Underground are partial female nudity, bare-chested male, held at gunpoint, frozen body, snorting cocaine.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
I should look at what the plot words for this movie that we're supposed to be discussing are.
Actually, if you add the words briefcase and caper, and Drew's right there. Opening
That's
night.
Right. That's right.
Plot keywords. Okay.
Birds.
Finger cut off. Ethan Hunt character. Luther Stickle character. Time bomb slit skirt.
I think Tom Cruise wrote all those keywords in IMDb.
Could have been. The tagline, expect the impossible again.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. Can we all agree that Mission Impossible is a dumb idea? The whole thing is dumb.
Whoa. What do you mean it's dumb?
It's the lowest of the common denominators in the James Bond, Jason Bourne universe. Like, it's all the same stuff. But James Bond works for, what, MI5? And Jason Bourne works for secret government, Treadstone, CIA kind of stuff. Ethan Hunt works for the Impossible Missions Force or whatever. Like, it's...
Yes,
it's this,
yes, and?
You know, it's this close to a cartoon. Which I guess Bond is too. I don't know. It's just a ridiculous idea.
I'm going to revert to the TV series and say that's what started this. Making a movie that was supposed to pay homage to the TV series in some way. And it was a little crazy, but you also go see The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
No, you're right. And those are sort of over the
top. Avengers.
Yeah.
Well, not the superheroes Avengers, but the Avengers detectives.
The Uma Thurman Avengers. Oh, that's funny. I'm sorry. The Diana Rigg Avengers is what I mean.
Yes.
Yeah. Patrick McNee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Who is the man? Was it Ralph Fiennes? Who was in the Avengers with Uma Thurman?
Sure.
Okay, look up the Avengers with Uma Thurman. Who plays the Patrick McNee character?
So Tom Cruise's hair.
Well, we're gonna get there. We'll dive right into the plot here.
Do we have to?
Yes, we do.
No, we don't.
Yeah, we do. We'll talk about it a little bit.
The Avengers movie.
Sean Connery was in it.
Jeremy Renner. Stellan Skarsgård.
Different Avengers movie.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know.
It was Ralph Fiennes, Uma Thurman.
Oh, Ralph Fiennes. Okay, good. I'm glad.
With Sean Connery.
Yes. Who had the weather controlling satellite or something, right?
Well, he played Sir August de Winter.
Ah, and he had a weather controlling device, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that tells you though. That's all about getting Uma Thurman in a cat suit. Anyway, okay, so Mission Impossible Dos. The deuce. Jason would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. It was a big deuce.
So, Ethan Hunt, Tom Cruise, while vacationing, is alerted by the IMF that someone has used his identity to assist Russian biochemical expert Dr. Vladimir Nekorovich, played by Rade Sherbinsha. Who we know from Snatch, Batman Begins, The Saint, Eyes Wide Shut, and Stigmata, of Biosite Pharmaceuticals to enter the United States, but purposely crashed the commercial airliner en route. Narevich, an old friend of Ethan, had forewarned the IMF of his arrival, planning to deliver a new virus called Chimera and its cure, Belephoron, or Belephone, whatever it's called.
It's MacGuffin and anti-MacGuffin.
Yes. Both of which he was forced to develop by Biosite he's delivered into the IMF hands. With the plane crash, IMF is worried that the virus is now out in the open, believing that the rogue IMF agent, Sean Ambrose, do Gray Scott, is behind the incident. IMF assigns Ethan to recover it. Okay, I'm going to give this movie praise right off the bat. We have the scene of Tom Cruise climbing El Capitan without any ropes. Which he did have ropes, they were erased or whatever, but he did do the climbing. And he throws his sunglasses, product placement, and gadgets in his first scene. And the opening credits do not give away any plot elements of the story. All you see are like medieval pictures and then like blood cells and stuff or viruses.
There's no plot for them to give away.
But still, when we talk about, especially four, we're going to talk about how the beginning of the movie can ruin the entire plot.
Let me ask you this. Is four better than two?
Yeah.
Ergo, giving away plot points during the credits makes for a better movie. Boom.
Okay, yes, and the Torture Logic Award goes to Brother Drew. Ipso facto.
It's not tortured if it's accurate.
So, Ethan is told he can use two members of his team to help him, but the third person has to be Naya Nordoff-Hall, played by Tandy Newton, who we know from W. And she is a professional thief who is presently operating in Seville, Spain. Now, she's going to be able to get close to Ambrose because she is an ex-girlfriend of his. And they have a meet-cute in a Spanish villa, I guess. A little bit of fun shenanigans. Followed by a car chase sort of thing that is straight out of the Bond movie, GoldenEye. Where James Bond raced Xenia Onatopp in the car.
Yeah, but were they talking to each other, like in normal speaking voices while they were racing in GoldenEye?
I don't think so, though. No.
Because they were here.
Yes, yes.
Very silly.
Yeah, it is very silly. So, then we meet the rest of the team. Computer expert Luther Stickle, Ving Rhames, who we know from Dave, Out of Sight, and Having the Meats. And pilot Billy Baird, John Polson. They go to Sydney, Australia, where Biosite Laboratories are located, along with Ambrose's headquarters.
Can we pour one out for John Polson? I don't know who he made mad. But he does not return.
No, no.
He's never seen again in these movies.
Nope. Well, Tandy Newton was supposed to return also. She had some of scheduling conflict, I think, yeah. She was going to eventually become a member of the IMF team.
Oh, was she replaced by Kerry Russell?
Maybe, yeah.
Did she have a Russian accent?
Well, not that you could detect.
I see what you did there.
So, they stake out Biosite, and Naya gets close to Ambrose and begins to find any information related to the Chimera virus. And then we go to a horse race. Well, actually, first we have the cutting off a finger scene.
Wait. First, we have Tom Cruise, like, with a little role-playing therapy session trying to work out aspects of his real-life divorce.
Well, of course.
Would it make you happy if I didn't feel good about it? Then feel better! I am positive that was a real-life...
Crit ass!
That was a real-life fight that he immediately like wrote down in a notebook. He was like, oh, that was good. We got to get that in a movie.
Got to use it. Use it, man.
Because mm-hmm. it made no sense in the movie. Like, there was no emotional context for it.
Well, and they had no chemistry together. He was way too hot, and she was way too cold.
Does he ever have chemistry with anybody?
Well, with us...
It's true.
I mean, with the viewer, but you're right. I mean,
as like a movie star and an action hero, yeah. But like with a co-star?
No. Not so far.
Never. Never seen it.
He apparently, during the filming of the horse race scene, which we'll talk about in a second, although we don't really have to talk too much about the horse race scene because it's a lot of like shenanigans that are unnecessary in a extra long movie. But you get a great location out of it, the horse racing. But during the horse racing scene, he got a little bit of tabloid attention for being a diva because they had to circulate to the extras not to look Mr. Cruise in the eye. But the reason why they had to do that is apparently they had to reshoot some scenes because a lot of the extras would just stop and point at Tom Cruise when they saw him. He's like, well, I get it.
Were they like... Oh my God, he is so short.
Exactly. Yeah, how did they see him?
And where did he steal that wig from?
The scene, especially the scene where they're arguing, he is towering over Tandy Newton.
And how tall is Tandy Newton, Jason?
She's kind of, I don't know, like a 150?
No, you're going to...
She's like 5'2".
Oh, is she really?
He's making it up.
Yeah, of course.
Go to the tape. She is 5'2". I guarantee it. Even given that, I think they still put like those Frankenstein shoes that Robert De Niro was wearing in The Irishman.
Well, actually, also in the Frankenstein movie.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, in The Irishman, does he play Jimmy Hoffa?
I think Pacino plays Jimmy Hoffa.
Oh, okay.
I have not watched it yet, though.
Me either.
I don't have that kind of time.
Tandy Newton, according to internet, is approximately 5'3".
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're absolutely right, and I apologize. I thought she had that thin model look about her, like she might be tall, but apparently not.
Well, she's playing opposite Tom Cruise.
Oh, that's true. You know, our president claims to be 6'3", right?
He's got the hands of somebody Tom Cruise's size of. We've lost Brother Jay.
Oh, that was great. Oh, I wish I would have thought of that. Oh, that's so smart.
we meet at the horse race. We meet Biosite CEO John McCloy, played by Brendan Gleeson from In Bruges and Edge of Tomorrow. And we figure out how this whole MacGuffin thing works. So Chimera is a virus that will kill you in 20 hours, which we know from the very beginning because he had 20 hours to get from point A to point B. And the anti-MacGuffin, Flebanox or whatever, that's the antidote that has to be given within 20 hours. And if it's not given, then it's going to be a huge, everybody dies and it's super contagious and blah, blah, blah.
But it's not contagious until after 20 hours.
It's also not, you can cure it up to 20 hours. You don't die until like 37 hours.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But you're apparently highly contagious at that 20 hour and 1 second mark.
When the virus like tips over.
Yes.
So reach the point of no return and Bridget Fonda comes out with her shoes.
That's a deep cut. I enjoy it.
Wow. That's a point of no return.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. The Femme Nikita remake, Point of No Return? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Excellent. I never did mind the little things or whatever. Yeah. Anyway, okay,
and,
so.
And, hey, and Bancroft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, blah, blah, blah. The IMF kidnaps McCloy and learns that Nerevich had accidentally.
Wait, without thinking about it too hard. sorry, I don't really want to talk about this movie either. have we done. Like, you got to answer immediately. Have we done an episode on Point of No Return?
No.
I have notes on it. I have notes on it. I think I have notes of, or maybe I have notes of, what is the other one? Kiss of the Dragon or whatever? Face of the Dragon? Dance of the Dragon?
Kiss of the Dragon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good question. I don't actually, we may have actually done an episode on Point of No Return. I do not know.
By the way, blah, 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 that is the plot.
Well, yeah, that's the thing okay, so at first you think, hey, this is going to be a plot where, like, you know, the world's at stake.
I never thought that.
And theoretically, the world is at stake, although you never see any evidence of that. Because quickly, skipping ahead a little bit in the plot part of it, it turns into a financial scheme where he's going to do basically a insider trading scheme.
Also, it's in Australia, so you'd have to take a plane for 20 hours.
Worst case scenario is Australia is just not a thing anymore.
Yeah.
Well, to our friends in Australia, let me apologize for my brother suggesting that it wouldn't be a big deal if Australia just disappeared.
Who said that? That's terrible.
No.
I said worst case scenario. That's pretty bad.
Yeah. You would miss it. I mean, there'd be no more Colin Hayes.
Yeah, absolutely. So Ambrose. There's a lot of mask work. Because we got Ambrose posing as Ethan. He tricks Naya into revealing the plan. And oh, by the way, is there supposed to be like sexual tension between Ambrose and his second in command?
Like one way, right?
Yeah, but he seems very distraught. What, the cornhole way?
No, like...
what? Did I...
Anywho, no, like a Smithers, Mr. Burns kind of tension.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right.
Niblet. Blah, blah, blah. They have the gunfight in the lab, which, okay, I know it's a John Woo thing. Besides the birds, is this slow motion during fights?
And the cartwheels?
Yeah, well, I know that Tom Cruise wanted to do his own fighting, and I know it was a big deal to make the fighting as realistic as possible, I guess.
It wasn't.
Well, that's the problem. Is it maybe because we've seen the John Wick movies and we see like fast, you know, gunjutsu or whatever.
Yeah.
We've also seen later Mission Impossible movies.
Well, true. Yeah.
Well, two of the three of us have.
and maybe I'll be proven wrong here, but the later Mission Impossible movies up the ante and become like a James Bond sort of thing where it's over the top and there's lots of gadgetry and it's not just broken down into a series of basically fist fights in slow motion. At one point...
But it always ends in a slow motion fist fight.
Does it? Okay, well, we'll see. But yeah, it's... I just felt sad for Tom Cruise. I think he wishes he were Keanu Reeves.
Except Keanu Reeves hadn't gotten here yet.
No, yeah. I know. I get it. But still.
I think more like he... The sad part is he was wishing he was Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, maybe. Yes.
Yeah.
At the time.
You know, that's... It's funny that you mentioned Nicolas Cage because when I was making my funny titles for my foul names tonight...
Uh-huh.
My copy is Mission Impossible 2 Turdsville, and the copy of Drew and Eric is Mission Impossible 2, The Rock was a better version of this movie.
And again, full acting chops with Face Off. Face Off. Also a great movie.
You just wait for Christmas.
Anyway, okay, so we have the fight in the, level 4 lab or whatever. Lots of broken glass and flipping around and so Naya ends up injecting herself with the only vial of virus, which does not make Ambrose very happy because he has confounded all of his plans. As thin as his planning has been, none of his plans come together.
Yeah, because he didn't know what he was stealing in the very beginning of the movie.
No.
So, you know, not a very good agent.
Well, not only that, but yeah, I mean, he should have grabbed the guy, but he killed Rade.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Yeah. So he grabbed the antidote, but he didn't have the virus.
Exactly.
And here's where, no, I was going to say, here's where the movie got really terrible for me, but no. It was pretty much a flat line. But, okay. Tom Cruise destroys the virus in the two guns in the little chamber. Right? The chamber's destroyed, and he has the third gun. Why? So clearly, that once the virus is exposed to air, it's no longer viable, or they would already all be infected and dead. Why wouldn't she just shoot the virus into the floor?
She put the virus in herself because that meant Ambrose couldn't kill her.
Also, if you have the only three copies of the Doomsday virus, why would you load them into guns?
Like, well, you know.
Maybe you'd have one of them in a gun, I suppose, for if you needed to use it in a hurry. But why would you have the other two? Even in the same room. But anyway, we won't even talk about that. I'm just going to let that go.
Reasons.
Exactly. It's a MacGuffin room. So yeah, so Ambrose then figures out that, okay, all his other plans have been thwarted, but he can figure out a way to make this happen. He can use stock trading to make himself a ton of money. Which, it's just, anyway, it's dumb. It's just dumb. I mean, at least the Bond villains, they wanted the world to burn just to see the world burn, right?
Well, I think they had motives, but... I mean, I think there's motivating factors. Money, world domination, control.
He just wants to own 51% of this chemical company.
Well, because that was money.
I suppose. It seems pretty flimsy. But he is not a very...
No, it's kind of genius. I mean, it is kind of genius. You buy stocks cheap, you inflate it by some disaster that can only be cured by you, so people have to buy your stuff. I mean, it's like the subplot of V for Vendetta.
Yeah, I suppose. But I don't know. It's, yeah.
You're really picking apart that part of the movie?
Well, I'm just disappointed.
That's the hill you want to die on?
Well, no, the other thing I'm disappointed with was the end fight, the slow motion fist fight between DeGray Scott and Tom Cruise was boring. There was just a lot of Yeah, it was like it was the original series Star Trek level of fighting. And it was slow motion and cool, I suppose.
At least it was intercut with scenes of Tandy Newton walking towards a cliff wearing a child's t-shirt.
Okay. Well, we know what Drew's into.
Neither of you have watched Westworld, right?
No.
No.
The TV series?
She's
nope.
She's in it, and she's great.
She was great in ER.
I don't remember her on ER.
She was in Africa with... what was his name? Not Wesley. What was the Noah Wiley's character? When he and the
Carter.
Yes, when he and Carter and Vlade Divac went over to Africa for Doctors Without Borders. Tandy Newton was one of the people they met, and she came back over. Turns out I kind of really liked ER. It was a soap opera, but it was fun.
ER was great.
Yeah, it had everybody in it. So, anyway. So, blah, blah, blah.
I'm sorry. It was no Saint Elsewhere.
You know what? I don't remember any of Saint Elsewhere. I remember it being good, but I've never seen any. I mean, was it ever in syndication?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
It was streaming somewhere one time. And, yeah, it was bad.
Was it? Okay.
It was really bad. There was like one of the doctors was treating convicts in a prison, and then a prison riot broke out, and he ended up being sexually assaulted by some of the prisoners.
Ooh, was that either Howie Mandel or Ed Begley Jr.?
No.
It was Mark Harmon, wasn't it?
No, it was... God, he's...
Because that could explain why Howie Mandel doesn't touch people anymore.
he had kind of curly hair.
It wasn't David Morris, was it?
Yes, it was.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh.
Wow. Wow. Sorry, that was...
But funny. It was... Oh, it was an impression. I mean, pretty heavy subject matter, I imagine, for the early 80s, right?
Yeah. But, well, they had Mark Harmon's character ended up HIV positive.
Hmm. Yeah.
I believe.
From prison sex?
No.
I've never seen it. And maybe
But even... it was done in such a soap opera-y way. It was really silly. I mean, like, it undercut all the gravity of the circumstances.
Like, do they cut to commercial with him looking scared?
Yes.
Of course.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, that's how you do that. Exciting.
And then I think they came back from commercial and his like shirt was like ripped open and he was kind of sitting like hugging his knees. Yes,
exactly. Shivering. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe in the shower. So, just to end this thing, they save the world. They save Tandy Newton. Ethan gets his vacation finally.
But the pilot, Billy, got shot in the head. No, he's still around. I don't know what happened to him.
Well, he just wasn't picked for the next mission, you know. That's the
thing. Well, they left Australia.
Yeah, I guess. So he had to say g'day to all the rest
of the... Is Luther good at what he does?
No.
He doesn't seem to...
No, he can't shoot anything. He gets shot too much, and... he almost didn't make it out of the truck because his fancy clothing, which he then later complained about it getting shot in a hole in it.
Yeah, they put a
when
hole
in it. Snagged it already.
But yeah, but somehow he is on every impossible mission ever.
True, true.
There is no IMF team that does not have both Ethan Hunt and Luther Stickle.
Well, because Ethan Hunt is Tom Cruise and Luther Stickle... He's got the meat.
Yes, he does.
Yes. So anyway, any other notes on Mission Impossible Dose?
I didn't take notes. There was no way I was committing any of this to writing. There was no way I was going to go to the effort of committing this to writing. I was going to waste my ink on this movie.
I do not care how dumb it was. I don't even care that it was just complete fan service. I love the fact that the birds were in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Loved it. They even had the pigeons as a smokescreen. And then he the had like one single dove.
Yes.
That was great.
Yeah. I like Tanny Newton. She was fine. I like the car stuff. I thought the motorcycle stuff was shoehorned in because Tom Cruise wanted to ride a motorcycle. I do believe that 3 has the best motorcycle scenes in it.
You seem to be very disrespectful of Tandy Newton in this movie.
No, it's just I didn't think she was anything special. I think she was fine.
She was the lone, bright, shining star in this oppressively stupid movie.
Okay, you're absolutely right. So, Brother Jay, how about a verdict?
Oh, wait, I'm going through the goofs in this now because I'm really committed to knocking it. The villains use nitrous oxide to knock out but not kill the people on the plane, which is silly because they're going to crash them into a mountain. But however, Sean tells his sidekick to disconnect the NO2 tank, both on screen and in the closed captioning. However, nitrous oxide is N2O. NO2 is nitrogen dioxide, a poisonous smelly gas that would be immediately noticeable and would kill everyone.
It's a byproduct of engine emissions.
Good to know.
That was the only thing interesting. There's tons of goofs in this.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay, remember, Sean Ambrose is not good at his job.
Oh, he's terrible.
Yeah.
He's really good at putting on masks, though.
Yes, he is.
And they stole the whole relationship between Ethan Hunt and Ambrose from David Morrell, right? In the Fraternity of the Stone?
Oh, maybe.
Where the main character of that, Drew McClane, he had, when he was going through his assassin school, everybody got matched up with doubles of themselves.
Yes.
So that they could each share one identity. And so when one was out of town, the other was occupying the domicile. So that's sort of what they alluded to in the beginning, right? Is that Ambrose and Hunt were often used interchangeably because they had similar physical attributes.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you've reminded me how much I love that book.
It's a great book.
Yeah.
Wow, somebody's really adept. One of the errors noted during the car chase in Spain between Ethan and Naya, the cars had wrong number plates. In Spain, they would be 0000 space XXX or XX hyphen 0000 hyphen XX, where X is a letter and O is the number.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow. That's my level of grape. My hat's off to you.
So, Brother Jay, what's your verdict?
I'm going to give this movie a D. I won't fail it because I didn't fall asleep and I didn't have to scream my way to ending it, but this is not a good movie. I think I would have appreciated the series had I never seen this movie, and I haven't seen any of the rest of them yet, but I'm just going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say, I'm thinking that this movie should just be skipped. If you're going to watch them, just skip this one.
Yeah, this is all. You don't need to see this movie, actually, to follow the series.
Yeah.
Actually, I think all the movies are pretty much
standalone.
Yeah, I think so.
There's no universe.
That is not true.
That's not true?
No, these last three are all like one big story.
Okay.
All right.
So you mean there's a Nikki, what's her name, in this that ties them all together?
Nikki?
From The Bourne.
Oh, you mean like a really important main character?
Yes.
Yeah, it's the Nikki equivalent is Ethan Hunt.
Okay, I get it. All right, so Drew, was it worth it?
This movie was absolutely worth it. This has been an extremely fun discussion. This has been a really dumb movie, but it was still fun. It, we didn't talk about the action much, but for the most part, John Woo may not be able to craft like a comprehensible story, but he does action pretty well. You know, his trademarks, I'm using finger quotes, may be getting a bit tiresome at this point, but it was still fun. It was fun to see Tom Cruise kind of trying to rip off Face Off.
Yeah, and Jackie Chan movies.
Yeah.
Or Chow Yun-Fat movies, probably, right?
Yeah. There was an endless variety of martial arts kicks.
Yeah, and also shooting gun sideways.
Yes, I laugh every time. Every time. But yeah, I mean, it didn't quite have the flair of like a Face-Off. There was no Somewhere Over the Rainbow scene, although I think they really wanted there to be. But yeah, it's worth it just to see the crazy eyes that Anthony Hopkins is giving the camera.
Well, okay, that last, the scene where, what is it? Is it still part of the lab facility, or is it at the very end with the pigeons? Where they Tom Cruise masks up the henchmen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like DeGray Scott's anger and frustration at that thing. I think he was appropriately over the top, but good.
Sure. Have I ever described to you my favorite sports press conference ever?
No, please do. What sport was it?
It was basketball. Okay. It was during the NBA Finals. I want to say 1997, six or seven. It was when the Chicago Bulls were playing the Seattle Supersonics in the finals. And this was a Supersonics team that had
Gary Payton.
Gary Payton, also known as, do you remember what his nickname was?
The Glove.
The Glove.
The Glove, yeah.
No, The Glove, because he that's how close he stuck to you when he was playing defense.
Was Detlef Schrempf on that team?
He was.
Okay.
Sean Kemp was still on that
team. Yeah. Oh, Rain Man.
That's right. And the Bulls won the first three games in that series. And then Seattle came back and they won, I think they won the fourth and fifth game. And it was one of those games that Michael Jordan had like an okay game, not his normal, like fantastic game in the finals. And Gary Payton had been guarding him. And during the press conference, Gary Payton was kind of feeling himself. And one of the reporters asked him, you know, how were you able to contain Jordan tonight? And Gary Payton is one of my favorite moments ever. He was like, man, what kind of question is that? I mean, what do you call me? And the reporter's like, Mr. Payton? He's like, no, what do you call me? And like the room's silent, and then finally he's like, "The Glove, you call me the Glove." Anyway, next question. And I felt so bad for him in that moment because that was bound to be the highlight of his career right there.
Yeah,
and he couldn't even get anybody to call him by his nickname, even though he was doing all sorts of like conversational gymnastics to get to somebody to say it. I bring this up because in this movie, one of the things I really enjoy about how awkward and about how flat it fell was when Anthony Hopkins was trying to do the same sort of linguistic gymnastics in order to be able to say, it's not called Mission Improbable, Mr. Yeah,
exactly.
Hunt.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, yeah, look at this movie. It brings it evokes so many awesome memories. It's great. You should not skip this movie. I think it was
completely... Mission Difficult, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's even worse.
Well, okay, and I'll have to admit, I agree, this is not a great movie, but I thought it was fun. I thought it was fine. It was super lightweight, so I didn't worry too much about it.
This is the kind of movie where you can be thumbing through stuff on your phone without any guilt.
Yeah,
I was.
Yeah. Well, this is also a movie where it's probably best for you to watch it the day of the podcast, because it is completely forgettable otherwise.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't have to hold any brain power into it. You're correct.
The only thing I remembered about this movie was something motorcycle, hair, and Tandy Newton was in it.
And Tom Cruise could not accept winning a fist fight at the end. I'm sorry, I don't mean the person Tom Cruise. I mean the character Ethan Hunt gave up every opportunity to win the fist fight until the very last second so he could do the fun gun kick flip shooting thing.
Made no sense.
It made no sense. And it was just something that probably John Woo thought of as like, oh, this will be cool. Now, how do we get there?
Step one, turn your shoe into a landmine.
Of course. Okay, so housekeeping.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go. I'll mention I have been embarking on a trip where I have been watching every Star Wars movie to get prepared for this movie coming out here in December.
Yes.
So I've been doing them in universe chronological order. So starting with the prequel movies and going through. And by the time I had started Rogue One, Disney Plus came out. So I've watched Rogue One. I've watched all of the original trilogy. And I've started Force Awakens on Disney Plus. I have to say, they look awesome.
Cool.
The new versions they have streaming on Disney Plus are amazing to look at.
Even of the old films?
Yes. Yeah, those are the ones that look so fantastic. Yeah. I don't know what they did. Some sort of new 4K remaster, but they look so great. They look so crisp.
Well, here's the thing. Bright. If they have the original prints, mm-hmm. they can go back and pull that resolution out of it. Because the film, the 35mm film, has enough resolution to upscale it.
And they
If they can go back to the masters, the problem is that over time, that acetate film starts to decompose. So,
yeah, and I don't know if you have any sort of affection for the original Star Wars movies, but the first one, you know, as groundbreaking as it was, it's kind of a snoozer until the very end. But it's good. It's good. Empire Strikes Back is still an amazing movie, like start to finish. It's an incredible movie. Return of the Jedi is probably the one that is nearest and dearest to my heart because I remember seeing it in the theaters. I think I was too young to see the other two. And so I loved that movie so much when I was a little kid. And watching it as an adult, it's kind of a mess and really, really silly. But I still love it. I can't get enough of it. There's just so many things in it that I remember from a kid. So great. But yeah, so I don't know if you are enjoying Disney Plus. I know you have it for a year for free.
I haven't used it at all, to be honest. I have it and I installed it, but it hasn't been on my radar. We finished a couple series that we were watching, and I can't even remember what. Anyway, we came to the end of a couple different series. And so I went to a new, I wanted to go to a new series, and coming up in the CBS paid network, their paywall is going to have Picard, the series. So, and Jesse's never seen any of the Star Trek. So with the exception of the new movies, he's never seen any of the old series, except, I mean, he saw a couple of them growing up, but never really in depth. So we're going back, and we started watching The Next Generation.
How's that?
Oh, man. I had to tell him, I'm like, okay, have no illusion that the first season is good, because it's not. But it lays the history and the groundwork to get you to the next seven seasons. So they're necessary because you have to know how the origin is to get to the finale. Once you get past the first season, things get exponentially better. The makeup gets better, the sets get better, the acting gets better, the special effects get better. By the seventh season,
Get way darker.
But they also get more complex. I mean, there's a lot more depth to everything, and there's a lot more that's tied together. So there's a little more cohesion in the universe. So not just kind of, you know, monster of the week stories. But unfortunately, for me, watching them, I am constantly like, I am mocking them out loud as we watch them. And I'm trying to stop it because I'm like, I'm, you know, I don't want to ruin this. And he's like, no, it's fine. It's funny. I'm like, yeah, but you got to pay attention. So I wasn't sure how he was liking it, but now if we watch one an evening, he's like, we got to watch three or four an evening. We got to get through them. I'm like, do you want to get through them because you want to finish them? He goes, like, no, I'm invested now. I'm interested. So that was kind of good. So in other news, so we went Black Friday shopping. So for Thanksgiving, we went out to dinner, which was fine. Low key. Not great, but it was fine. I mean, I didn't have to cook, so I guess that's always an advantage. We went Black Friday shopping, and it was a snooze fest. There was just not a lot of people where we went, which was amazing for Portland.
That's great.
Yeah. I didn't actually buy anything. Well, I shouldn't say that. I didn't buy anything. I set out to buy something, and the store, the Fred Meyer that I went to, had already sold out of what I wanted, because we didn't go when they opened at 5. We went like 5:30. Because I said I wasn't going to be one of, I'm not going to be one of those crazy people waiting at the door. I've done that before. I don't need to do that. So by the time I got into the store, they didn't have what I wanted. I was like, okay, well, we'll go to a different Fred Meyer and see what they had it. The other store was so dead that they hadn't given away the first 100 gift cards to the first 100 people that walked through the door an hour after they'd opened.
Yikes.
So they handed both Jesse and I gift cards when we walked in the door. Like, ooh, this store is dead. Which should have also been indicative by the fact that this particular store has rooftop parking and a main parking lot below at the main level. There were three cars on the rooftop parking. So, yeah, it was kind of surreal. So I think that's just indicative of that online retail is killing, you know, the box stores. And I'm equally, you know, I equally ascribe to that because I don't want to go. I'll shop online if I can.
Yeah.
But because we were debating about what I was going to buy and I had my money and I was like, and be responsible and buy this thing. And then I'm like, well, screw it. I'm not going to be responsible. So instead I bought a VR headset.
What kind?
The Oculus Rift S.
Oh. Have you played around with it much?
Yes.
How is it?
It's crazy. It is insane. I actually can't play it for more than an hour at a time because it's overwhelming. I'm sure I'll get used to it, but it's just like, it's so much sensory overload. And it's a little disorienting at first. I'm kind of not quite adjusted to the motion dynamics. But the advantage to the Rift S is the unit is completely self-contained. You don't need any room sensors or any other external equipment. All you need is the headset and the controllers. The sensors are built into the headset rig. So there's a couple games that I have for it that I've kind of started playing. I'm not good at either of them. And then there's another game I have been playing for a long time that is VR capable, but wasn't really designed for VR. So I can't really play it, but I was done with that game anyway. But just going through it to look at stuff is amazing. It's so surreal. It's crazy. The depth and the graphics. I can't I'm baffled by it. It's really magic.
Nice. That is super cool.
And the nice thing is because it's self-contained, if I can put it in a case and take it with me. If somebody else has a computer that's capable of running it, then I can take it to their house and they can use it and try it out and stuff. So, but you have to have a pretty good, you have to have a pretty decent computer. I have a pretty good updated computer, gaming rig, so I'm good there. But in more funny or entertaining news, maybe not funny. Well, somebody will laugh. I think the week before Thanksgiving, so the week before Thanksgiving, my furnace was acting up. I mean, the furnace has only been installed for like, I don't know, a year and a half. And it's a super high efficiency gas furnace. It's like 98% efficient. And it works really well. It has this weird fan system where it modulates the fan. So it's not this whoosh of hot air. It just kind of alternates high and low wave impulses to kind of, I don't know, it makes the heat better, I guess, somehow. But anyway, the furnace kind of stopped working. And Derek was down with a hammer, of course, which is exactly what you should do to a gas furnace, is bang on everything with a hammer. And he noticed that the igniter was not igniting the furnace, so he pulled the igniter out to look at it, and it had disintegrated into dust.
Oh.
So the igniter is just this big piece of metal that glows cherry red when it's energized with electricity to force the gas to flame. So, of course, it was also like 28 degrees outside. So Derek says to me, well, you can use the furnace, but you're going to have to light it yourself.
That doesn't sound scary at all.
Considering my history with lighting things with gas,
mm-hmm.
Not really my level of comfort. So I'm downstairs. When it gets cold enough in the house, I want the heat. I have to turn the furnace off and back on so that it resets the safety. So it starts the cycle. And then I was using like my creme brulee torch at like full flame to try and get the furnace to come on. And I told Derek, I'm like, I'm going to die. Like, this is going to be, I'm going to blow up the entire house. And this is going to be like, mother is going to be like, he knows better than this. Like, he knows better. Like, he had propane problems before. So lighting my furnace with a creme brulee torch was not really the highlight of things. So Derek went and got the replacement igniter the next morning, Friday morning, a week before Black Friday, puts the igniter in, and the igniter comes on and stays on, even when the furnace isn't running. It's this giant cherry red igniter because it's energized and just glowing hot. So Derek's like, that's a problem. So what's his solution? Is, well, when you want heat, you're just going to have to plug the igniter in, and then as soon as the gas ignites against the igniter and turns to flame, you'll have to unplug the igniter. Like, have we met? I don't have good luck with electricity either. Like, this is going to end badly somehow. I'm either going to get shocked or I'm going to burn my eyebrows off. One of the two scenarios. So, eventually Derek ordered a... Well, he ordered a new circuit board, which turned out to be the problem with the furnace. But it took him a while to get it delivered here, because, of course, last week was Thanksgiving. But he finally installed it, and so we were like, oh, so happy to have heat again reliably without, you know. Because in the meantime, then it's just like, okay, I'm going to jack the heat up in the house to like 78, because that's going to be the one shot for the day. Otherwise, it's just sweaters. But I'm not dead, so that's good.
I have a fun furnace story about Thanksgiving.
Uh-oh.
So we had Thanksgiving up at the lake house for the first time.
Oh, I saw the pictures.
Yeah, it was great. And we had just... it was like 34 degrees and snowing heavily. So for those of you who do not live in... climates where you get snow, 34 degrees is not ideal because it's snow, but it's this really wet snow that's super melty. So you end up with this slush layer underneath the top layer of snow if you're trying to drive on it. Not
it's
great.
It's also the heaviest to shovel.
Yes. Yeah. And turns out, as a separate story, the Expedition does not handle that type of snow very well.
Oh, no.
So I went up there on Wednesday morning to get things ready. And we keep our, when we're not there, we turn the thermostats down pretty cool. Maybe to like 50 degrees. Just so we're not burning up a lot of heating oil when we're not using the house. And then my wife and children were going to come by later. She was going to pull them out of school early and come up later in the day. So I was going to get the heat up and get the house ready. And I got there, and we have two different thermostats. Well, we have five thermostats, but we have two, I guess, thermometers. So we can see how warm it is in the house, one upstairs and one downstairs. I got there, and the upstairs was 33 degrees in the house.
Oh, man.
And the downstairs was 35 degrees. Turns out at some point my furnace had tripped off and had not restarted. So the power was cut out. So I got that going, and I was terrified that I had... My biggest worry is that I had not caught it on the way down, but maybe caught it on the way up, temperature-wise. And the pipes had frozen because my house is entirely heated by hot water. It has radiant in-floor heat. So we have water pipes running all over the insides of my floors. It's just straight water because the previous owners were paranoid about cross-contamination. So they didn't... A lot of people will put like glycol in the lines too to give it some freeze protection. There is no glycol in our lines. So I was super paranoid, and my house was frigid. So I got the furnace going, and everything seemed to be working okay. But, you know, as we found out with Mom and Dad's garage, sometimes you don't know the damage of frozen pipes until they thaw. And another fun thing about in-floor heat, radiant heat to heat your entire house is it's really stable. So it doesn't cool down quickly, which I think probably saved my house. But the bad part of that is it also doesn't heat up very quickly.
Yeah.
So I had my children coming like in a couple hours, and my house was 33 degrees and was not likely to be above 50 by bedtime. But so I was stressing pretty hard about this whole situation. Like, didn't even... I was pondering whether or not I should just turn them around, because I didn't know if I wanted them in the house when it was this cold. But I talked to my wife, and she wanted to come out anyway because she had to start cooking for the next day when Mom and Dad were coming out. So we have a gas fireplace in the upstairs living room, which it gets pretty hot. It can provide some heat, so at least it could provide some localized heat. And so I had that on. But I found another fun side effect. If you use that gas fireplace for, like, say, 8 hours, I imagine the stack gets pretty hot, and the metal roof that the stack goes through also probably gets pretty hot. Which meant that the huge snow load I had on my roof was completely melting and turning into... It looked like a monsoon was coming off my roof. And so I had snow packed all around my yard, you know, near the house. And so there's nowhere for the water to go except through doorways.
Oh...
So I had water pooling up outside of door. We had a back door and the man door to the garage were starting to leak water into the garage and into the house downstairs. Luckily, our front door is on a raised porch. But yeah, so I was trying to figure out how to deal with that, because we noticed that the next morning when the temperature had gotten up to like 58 degrees by that point. The house was
in the house.
Okay. So the house was starting to actually be habitable, but then water was coming in and mom and dad were on their way, and so I was trying to dig some channels out of snow. I actually installed this this ghetto tarp underneath our back deck to catch the water that was raining down and try and divert it away from our back door. And asked dad to bring up a shop vac because I didn't have one up there, and so I could suck up some of the water. So I spent all morning outside, digging snow, and it's snowing this entire time. It had snowed all night. It was snowing all morning.
And as you said before, this is a heart attack snow.
Yes. Yes. And so mom and dad came out, and so he brought the shop vac, which is great, because I was trying to squeegee water away from standing water away from outside of the doorway. And then they showed up, and my daughter comes out and tells me I need to go help grandma. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll get there. I'm busy. And then she came back later. She's like, no, you need to go help grandpa too. I was like, okay, what do they need? Turns out I needed to help them because dad got the expedition stuck. He at least made it down the driveway to the house, but then when he was trying to turn around, he got it stuck.
Oh.
So then I had to divert my efforts there and spend, I don't know, probably the next hour trying to dig him out and get him turned around to a point where he felt comfortable enough that he could make it out of the driveway. So that was a lot of fun.
And you can't just park up on the main driveway because then you block your neighbor's access.
No, that's actually where he parked.
Oh, okay.
Because my neighbor, I think, is in Arizona right now. But apparently there's a slight hill on my driveway. And dad was convinced that if he could get back up to the top of that hill, that he'd be able to get out no problem. So it's probably about a third of the way down the driveway from the house. But it was so slick and so wet that when he tried to turn around, his car actually just started sliding sideways.
Ew.
Almost took out my fence. But of course, you know, dad's prepared. He had these traction mats ready to go.
Of course he did.
Yeah, so it's this really rough kind of astroturf, kind of shut out into carved out into long kind of chevron arrows, so you stick them under your tires and they bite into the ice. And so about three, maybe four iterations of that to get him turned around got him going straight enough that he could get back up that hump. And so, you know, the entire time we're doing this, in the back of my head, I'm stressing out that the water at my back door is just pooling up and coming inside my house while I'm doing this. And then, you know, my wife is, she's very schedule oriented. So she had all the food planned. She doesn't like people sitting around either. So she had all the food planned to be ready exactly when they got there, so that we could eat immediately and the food would be all warm. But then dad and I are out, you know, trying to get this thing turned around for an hour. So when we were finally done, you know, I wanted dad to go in and rest, and I wanted to go deal with the back door. And my wife's like, no, we're eating now. I was like, oh, but I gotta go. She's like, no, we're eating now. I'm like, okay, we're eating now, I guess. And so then we're having Thanksgiving lunch, because it was pretty early in the day, so that mom and dad could get back before it got dark at 3. So the entire time we're eating, again, in the back of my head, I'm looking out at my deck and just watching the water still rain down off my roof. And I'm like, that's going straight in front of my back door. It's like, it's all pulling up in front of, it's in my back door. It's now in my downstairs. It's in my downstairs. It is creeping into my house. My house is flooding. There's wood rot. The wood is rotting as we eat. But that's all in my head. I'm like trying to be very pleasant and sociable and not yell at my children for chewing with their mouths open. And then having them say things like, well, grandpa's doing it. I'm like, I cannot yell at my father.
Have no control over him. Have tried for decades. It never worked.
Yeah. And then after we ate, sorry, this is turning into a much longer story than I anticipated.
No, it's...
But after we ate, something really strange happened. My oldest daughter somehow guilted or manipulated our father into playing a board game with her. Trivial Pursuit.
That's pretty industrious.
Like a kid's edition of Trivial Pursuit. So, Dad and Emma played Trivial Pursuit against Mom and Elizabeth. And it was the weirdest thing to watch. But it was very cute. And they were doing that. And then I went and used the shot back down and sucked up all the water standing outside of my doorway.
So this is grandparents appreciating their grandchildren time.
Yeah. No, it was great. It was really fun to see.
Surreal.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I was told about it later and couldn't believe it, but
I have pictures.
Yeah. No, I was there at the beginning of it. It was really funny to see how it went down. You know, Elle like saying, "Grandpa, play Trivial Pursuit," and he was like, "No," her just being persistent. She's like, "No, play with me." He's like, "No, that's," you know, and then he tried to deflect and then act all goofy, and she's like getting it out and setting it up. She's like, "You're green." He's like, "Oh." And then because he was teamed up with Emma, he couldn't just kind of blow it off and be super goofy, cuz you know, there were stakes at that point.
So who won?
I don't know. I was trying to make sure my downstairs wasn't flooding.
Fair enough. Well, nobody died.
Nobody died. And by the time we left, the water all seemed to be under control.
And your house isn't floating down into the lake.
No, it's not. And I'll be going up there tomorrow. Hopefully my furnace has not kicked off again, because I think it's -2 up in Willow right now.
Is there some sort of device you can use to monitor?
There is. We have a device that will actually call a pre-programmed number and give an alert if the temperature drops. Came with the house. But I could not program it because the previous owners had a pin that they did not leave us. So I hadn't worried about it before last weekend. So I actually emailed the former owners and got the pin for it. So I will be programming that when I'm up there tomorrow.
Sweet. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's a brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.